Meeting of the Planning Committee, Monday, February 6th at 9 a.m. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the January 3rd meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move for approval, Madam Chairman.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 3 on the agenda is public comment. If you have a public comment, please come forward. You have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Please state your name and address for the record. Is there anyone here for public comment? My timer ready.
Good morning. I'm Stuart Whiteside, Stephen Whiteside and Associates, 501 Wando Park Boulevard. I'm here to represent the developers for the George Brown Road offices that's on the agenda, and we're all here for questions if you have them.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here for public comment? All right, seeing none, public comment is closed. Item number 4 on the agenda is annexations.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
We have one annexation before you this morning. It's on Chuck Daly Boulevard. It's about a 0.23-acre parcel directly across from MPW. You can see it there in the aerial. It is recommended for community-scale commercial, but because they have not asked for any other designation, it will come in as R1, low-density residential district, which is similar to, as you can see, the yellow parcel behind it. It's currently vacant, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Are there any questions from the committee?
Yeah.
Ms. Hyatt?
Ma'am? Okay. It's to the left of Shadow Drive. I was trying to place where it is. I see now.
Yeah, between Shadow and Pleasant Pines.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Move for approval, Madam Chairman.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
My only question is, do we have any idea what they want to do on this commercial part of Mount Pleasant?
On the parcel, the subject parcel?
Yes, ma'am.
No, we haven't received any submittals. It will come in as R1, so they could, you know, do a single-family house. Presumably, it's to connect to sewer, but we haven't received any submittals or been in talks with anybody.
There are several parcels along there which look like they're moving forward with whatever they were planning in the last couple of years. But that's the reason I ask.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Right. Thank you. Any further discussion or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Moving on to item number 5, 5A. Request approval of impact assessment and conceptual plan for George Browder Boulevard.
So Mr. Peter Stone, senior planner and staff to Planning Commission, is going to present this impact assessment.
Thank you.
Good morning, Planning Committee. Before you, have a request for an impact assessment and a conceptual plan approval for George Browder office development. It's on 6.7 acres of vacant land and is proposing nearly 80,000 square feet of office and medical office. And just for your information, whenever we receive a request for anything above 40,000 square feet and 75 peak hour trips, that then requires it to come through as an impact assessment through council onto DRB and then through our development review team technical process. So that's the process this will be following. This is the aerial, and it'll be important to orient ourselves. We have Park West Boulevard right here. We have George Browder Plan West, and we have the Church of Life Park also Plan West. And you can see that's the public shopping center just to the northeast of the parcel. And just as another bit of information, when these impact assessments come through and as information is made public, staff reaches out to these neighboring properties and we share and we talk about how these can be more cohesively designed. And just in reaching out to the leadership at Life Park, they believe this is a very symbiotic use and believe this will be a very good addition to the area. The zoning is area-wide business, and the future land use is community-scale commercial. And this actually straddles right on the Highway 41 and the Carolina Park 10-mile district. So there's going to be a 3-mile radius in which you'll be able to serve both areas. So it's going to be, if you're thinking about residential areas like Rivertown, Dunes West, Park West, Carolina Park, Darrell Creek, those will all be served by this commercial development. And within that 3-mile radius, and will provide balance to that residential heavy north end. Here's the proposed conceptual plan. As I mentioned, you know, office of this scale is really non-existent on the north end. I believe Carolina Park has a couple things coming through. The only other one I can think of is Oakland at Innovation Way at Oakland, and that's a 50,000 square foot building, but it's strictly for economic development use. So it's a little bit more exclusive when it comes to its zoning. This is general office, which will be more inclusive and allow more commercial uses to come in. And it will be, again, bringing a sense of balance to that area. Another thing, the comprehensive plan contemplates mobility data. And really, that's the technical term for commuting patterns. And what's really interesting about this is that the residential communities I mentioned, Rivertown, Dunes West, Park West, especially, and let's just consider especially when All-American Boulevard is brought online, you would be able to access this commercial development without ever having to get on Highway 17. So not only is it fulfilling a use, a need, but it's doing so in a way that would be minimally invasive and not contributing further to the Highway 17 impacts. So as I mentioned, there are 80,000 square feet of office. You've got 3 2-story office and medical office buildings. The impact fees, just from transportation impact fees, we're looking at $429,000. If you factor in fire, MPW, municipal impact fees, we're looking close to $700,000. And we can provide a full breakdown of that if you'd like it. The three topics that we want to discuss in this impact assessment, there is a request for a reduced natural roadside buffer. There is the potential for low impact development techniques, and there will be required coordination with the All-American Boulevard Phase 2 expansion. So this is the layout, and if we're talking about the reduction of the 100-foot natural roadside buffer, which currently exists, the request is reduced down to 50. There are 13 historic live oaks on this site. And I say that and I bring it up because it is unique. I believe last year we looked at the north end retail village that's maybe 2 sites over. That was a 14-acre site where they proposed racquetball and tennis courts. I believe there were 2 historic live oaks on that 14-acre site. And Life Park, in the first phase, that's 5 acres. I recall only seeing 1. So to have 13 historic live oaks on this 6-acre site is pretty unique. And staff would like to commend the applicant for right now siting the buildings to preserve these. And it is DRB's purview over the siting of buildings. And its expressed purpose of that is to preserve historic trees. So what would happen if you were to require a 100-foot buffer? It creates a pinch point and compresses the site and would make design review board's job a little bit more difficult in preserving these trees. And the other thing to consider is that All-American Boulevard swoops down at this portion planned north, and it's avoiding some wetlands, but in that is creating another pinch point. So really, this site could become very compressed very quickly if it does not make use of that, the relaxation of that natural roadside buffer in the 50 feet that can be granted by this body. The other thing to note is that in 2007, there was another conceptual plan that went along with this parcel, and it was granted the 50 feet based on the items that I just mentioned. So just wanted to bring that up. The vesting has long been gone on that, but I just thought it'd be good to bring up just as historical context. The second item that we'd like to bring up is the opportunity for low-impact development techniques. Now, there are 75 surplus parking spaces that this development is providing, and that's well within the right to do, and it's actually not uncommon to provide that much surplus. Staff is just requesting that they study the site and find ways in which they could provide LID techniques within that 75 surplus spaces. You're really talking about 35,000 square feet of impervious surface that could be converted to a bioswale, pervious pavers, pervious concrete. So there's options that if they were to coordinate with our engineering and development services team, that we would definitely would like for them to study. And finally, there is the requirement for coordination on the All-American Boulevard Phase 2 extension. It's going to be very important that these two projects are harmoniously integrated because they're going to be coming online at the same time. So when we talk about details of crosswalks, grade, and everything, it's going to be very important that these two are harmoniously integrated, and they will be coming online. I believe bidding will be completed for All-American Boulevard Phase 2 in July, and proposed beginning construction is 2025. These items will be taken separately. There are going to be the impact assessment that will need to be voted on and the conceptual plan. So as you vote on these separately, I will share Planning Commission recommended approval of the impact assessment. Planning Commission also recommended approval of conceptual plan with the 50-foot buffer, and that siding be addressed by the design review board. Those were the two recommendations. That's all the staff has. If you have any questions, glad to answer.
Are there any questions from the committee?
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chapman?
Was there any issue with All-American Boulevard, or we already own that right-of-way, and their plan totally incorporates our right-of-way? My only other question is, in terms of the resilient type of paving, is there a reason that staff didn't make any suggestions regarding that, like they did for the recommended 50-foot buffer and recommended siding of the buildings?
The Planning Commission made these recommendations.
Okay, this wasn't staff. This is the Planning Commission.
No, the Planning Commission made these recommendations. It was brought up in the presentation, and they had the opportunity to itemize their conditions, and these were the two that they made their recommendation for approval with.
But if we chose to, the committee could, in approving this, make that recommendation. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Corley, do you have anything? So what they're saying is that they can have all that extra parking. Can we recommend they don't, or can we put that stipulation that why all that extra parking? And the tree mitigation, I love the fact that they worked around the trees, but wouldn't they have to do that anyway? Right?
You would. When it comes to the design review board, you will have to work the buildings around it. At a certain point, you'll look at a site and realize 13 historic live oaks, it's just not feasible. So you would start looking at the health of the trees and what would be able to last construction. And so certainly it is priority one of the design review board. It doesn't always work out that some of these make it through.
Can I see that one slide? This shared use path, is that a sidewalk? Is that what that is? This shared, the purple line?
That's correct. You have a 10-foot shared use path, and there will be bike lanes. And I believe James Aton and possibly Brad Morrison are here if you have any other questions about All-American Boulevard. But that's the standard detail when it comes to All-American Boulevard. That's just the detail for the cross-section of it.
Okay, and I have the worst spatial relationship geography. I'm terrible at it. But is that part of the Mount Pleasant Way? Yes. Okay. All right. That's what I was thinking. So I agree with Ms. Corley. I think it's great that they're preserving those 13 trees in the design. I think that that's really good. I guess my concern also is the 75. If we can go back to the 75 surplus parking spaces, is there an alternative in this 35,000 square foot space? Like you've talked about the LID techniques and. I mean, I'm thinking like a small green space for the office park to have. Is that a possibility?
So much like what we have out in our parking lot here is kind of what I'm referring to. If you can have, they're within the range of allowable parking. They're well within their right to have that. It's not excessive. It's in the range. There's a minimum and a maximum range that they are directly within that. Staff is just requesting that they research ways they can incorporate low impact development techniques, and no different than the bioswale that we have in our parking lot.
Okay. And is that something that we would need to add in our motion, the recommendation for those LID techniques?
Yes.
So that's one additional. Is that what you were asking?
Yes. Ma'am.
Okay. All right. Just thank you. Just clarifying that. All right. Let's go back to the last slide. Do we have a motion on part A, the impact assessment?
So moved.
Motion to approve.
Mm-hmm. I'll second it, but I guess we'll talk about the conceptual plan in the next motion.
Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second on the impact assessment. Is there any further discussion?
Yes, ma'am. The property next to this, we've required a 100-foot buffer and kind of stuck with that. My question is, by approving a 50-foot buffer here, does this lessen our stand to try to stay with that 100-foot buffer?
So, Councilmember Chapman, the Church at Life Park actually, and there's a distinction that needs to be made, it has a 100-foot buffer. They're required, at the bare minimum, to have a 50-foot. The PD and conceptual plan that was approved in 2007 gave it a 50-foot buffer. They are voluntarily, to this day, showing 100-foot. So it's really just a matter of terminology. At any point, they would be able to reduce that on their own, but voluntarily, they have provided the 100-foot.
I think it wasn't totally voluntary. I think because of that commercial development, we specifically required 100, because I remember making motion on that commercial development for 100-foot buffer. That's why I'm asking the question.
So you're not referring to Life Park?
I'm not referring to Life Park. I'm referring to the development with the tennis courts, etc.
I apologize. Yeah, you're correct. So I was referring to Life Park. The North Retail Village, yes, sir, that is 100 feet.
And that's, well, I thought it was next to it, but I guess Life Park is just a smaller area.
Right in between, and then you have the retail village, the 14-acre, that is 100 feet.
I apologize.
All right, do we have any further questions or discussion on Part A, impact assessment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Moving on to Item B, the conceptual plan, do we have a motion? And remember, in addition to the itemized condition,
I would move for approval with all of the itemized conditions shown, as well as requiring live engineering and planning for the extra parking lot area.
Okay. Do we have a second on that?
A second.
We have a motion and a second, and it is to approve the conceptual plan with the recommended 50-foot buffer, the recommended siding of buildings, and LID techniques in the surplus parking area.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion carries. All right, moving on to item number 6, discussion and possible action regarding the establishment of a citizens commission to address conservation, resiliency, and green space.
This came before town council, and the motion was made to place it on a planning committee for further discussion. I know it was also in the flood resilience committee at 8:15 this morning, and so I will leave it up to the chairman to further discussion.
All right. Do we have any thoughts from the committee on this, or do you feel that you've already covered the majority of this in flood resilience? Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, we addressed this in great detail at a meeting. I had the opportunity to chair the meeting on behalf of the mayor since he's out sick. And the committee was very emphatic about moving forward with this commission with great detail at the meeting, including 10 to 15 letters of recommendation from as far up as the governor's office resiliency commission to state senator who chairs uh, fish and Wildlife, and who actually created a green space funding for the state. So with all of the endorsements we've had, and with the specifics about what this commission would do, the committee voted unanimously to take the proposed layout of what the commission would do, how many members, who would be on it, what specific responsibilities they would have, and ask the town attorneys to develop a resolution for us that would go to Water Resources Committee meeting in March to get their endorsement as well, in which case, if and when that came through, it would then go to council with the recommendation from both the Resiliency Committee as well as Water Resources. And I would request that this committee make an endorsement of the creation of the commission as well. And I would make that in the form of a motion.
All right, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
We have
a motion and a second. We are in discussion. Is there any statements from the committee? All right, I do have a couple questions. I was unable to make the Flood Resilience Committee meeting this morning. What is the deliverable for the committee?
The deliverable would be that this commission, like other commissions that we have, would make recommendations on resiliency, etc., for the Resiliency Committee of Town Council. They would have no responsibilities for making laws, etc. Anything like that would be done by the committee. They would be advisory in nature only, similar to Planning Commission, similar to the Settlement Communities Committee Commission, similar to what we've done with Recreation Commission and others that I don't have written down here. But it'd be some. They would simply be an advisory group to give the Resiliency Committee. The Resiliency Committee was just formed last year. So it would be advisory. They would give us ideas. They would give us whatever their thoughts were on whatever we were looking at. And it is, again, something that state is doing, Charleston County is doing. They're setting up their Resiliency Commission as well. And as I said, the state is doing it. And it just makes sense. It makes sense to have professionals as well as members of the community that may be on land trusts and things like that to give us some ideas. I serve on that committee. I don't know how long it will, but I serve on that committee. I know Ms. Corley serves on that committee. Ms. Hyatt serves on that committee. And we would get ideas that the committee would then take and make whatever revisions or whatever recommendations, whether it's for ordinances, whether it's for oversight, but the committee itself, the Resiliency Committee of Council, would have the last say.
And I guess my question then becomes, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I think it's would be great to have some expertise from the community, kind of basically giving volunteer free advice to the town,
right,
instead of having to hire, you know, a consultant every time that we need, you know, someone who's got information on those kinds of things. The implementation of these sort of resiliency things seems to me to come through planning, right? Like that is how we implement our, if we're going to have a zoning change that impacts low impact development, if we're going to have, you know, any sort of these recommendations. So I guess I just want to, I don't want to undermine the Planning Commission and their role in doing things. I think this, I want this to be like a value add that, that supplements and supports. But I guess I just want to ensure that we are involving the planning department in this, and that whatever sort of, cause I guess I just, maybe it's just, I don't have all the ideas, right? And maybe there are ideas that are going to come through that have zero to do with planning. But in, I guess the way that I'm thinking now, it seems like every idea is going to have to come through planning to implement.
I'm happy to try to answer that as
Thank
well.
You.
The building environment in particular is runs through the Planning Commission, eventually comes to Planning Committee. This Commission for Resiliency, or the Green Commission, would look at the open environment. In other words, that environment which is the lands around the community, as opposed to the built environment, and how to do things which affect the resiliency of our community. I don't believe the Planning Commission or the Planning Department or Planning Committee, for that matter, looks at how to protect flooding, how to look at the open environment of the lands for conservation. That's the kind of thing that this Green Commission would look at, and that's just a couple of them. But that's the idea. The built environment goes through the Planning Commission, comes through the Planning Committee, and then moves forward. This is for the open space environment, which in turn leads to resiliency, leads to reduction in things like flooding, leads to things like were done at Boone Hall, that which is a wonderful opportunity for Mount Pleasant. And as a matter of fact, the individual who's responsible now for Boone Hall was very supportive and sent a letter of support for doing this. So that's the difference. That's the difference.
Ms. Hyatt,
the part of the built environment that I think they might contribute to would be our low impact development. And if there are pieces that come from that commission regarding that, I think that they could be sent to planning, you know, that one committee could recommend that we review it at this committee as well. So, but most of the pieces I think are going to be about our natural environment. But I would like for them to contribute to ideas for us doing low impact development. So there might be some pieces where they could contribute that way and that we would see at this committee.
Yeah, and I think it's great to have a resilience committee because, like you were saying, it's being done at various levels and there's potentially grant opportunities and resources that could be brought into our community to help us take down green spaces and preserve them for the community. I feel like we are so built environment already in the town of Mount Pleasant when you're talking about the committee focus being on open spaces. I'm just like, what open spaces are left? But all right, so if there's no further discussion,
Ms. Corley. Yeah. So I think also as we're thinking about this, this is my fourth year on this committee planning, and we always have, I think, the longest agendas compared to all other committees. Commission works incredibly hard with all the stuff we send them and staff sends them. And I just think when you're looking at resources and mind space and what's important to us, it's definitely the right, respectful thing to do to have this commission focus on green issues only, if that makes sense. Thank you.
All those in any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries unanimously to recommend to council that we adopt a green commission, a resiliency commission. All right, moving on to item number 7. We have a presentation by the Metro Charleston Chamber of Commerce and the Trident Area Home Builders, and Councilman Chapman is going to make a brief introduction.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And the reason I wanted to make this introduction is because there appears to be some question or confusion about what this ordinance is about. A recent email from a staunch supporter in the community said and was concerned that this ordinance was raising the number of possible residents or residential units in what it does. There's a difference between comp plan and an ordinance. The comp plan is aspirational, an ordinance is law. I've been told that the reason for this ordinance is because our schools are crowded and we've got a multifamily zoning moratorium that ends in March. It might end in March, but there are no permits available till January. So one way or the other, we got until January to try to do something. There seems to be a rush to do this. As far as the schools are concerned, I asked Jeff Bowery, Chief Operating Officer, Charleston County Schools, whether or not our schools are overcrowded in terms of their design. And we received a layout of all the schools in Mount Pleasant. And I'm going to let you all have a copy. Bell Hall capacity is 810 students. In FY 2022, 651 students. Projected for 2023, 665. Carolina Park, 958 students. Fiscal year 2022, 895. FY 2023, 974, but they think it's going to be less. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but Lucy Beckham High School, capacity, 1482. FY 2022, 1229. It suggests that they expect in 2023, 1,666. Mr. Bowery says, based on what they've seen this year, they're not going to get anywhere near that. Wando High School, 3,213. FY 2022, which is this year, 2975. 2563 estimates in 2023. And I point these out because people have talked about the problems with housing in the community. Average cost of housing in Mount Pleasant last year was $875,522. Median sales price was $719,950. I don't think there are any teachers that can afford that kind of housing. We've got to do something for the teachers. We've got to do something for the nurses. We've got to do something for the public works employees, etc. Our economic development plan that we voted unanimously to approve on page 58, I'll read it, Madam Chairman. Increase town supply of attainable housing to reduce inflow of essential employees from other municipalities. And that leads me to what other municipalities in South Carolina and other places are doing. Just last week, we had three different articles in the Post and Courier. Greenville unveils overhaul of city's development rules to try to do more attainable housing. Beaufort area leaders, and in particular, the city of Beaufort, is having to spend $3.4 million annually into a trust fund to do attainable housing. I don't know that we want to spend our money out of our budget on attainable housing. We need to let the private sector do it. Charleston County in the Saturday paper. Housing proposal, a buffet of options. The county's looking at spending money out of their budget to create a trust fund and also they've got 11 options looking at. Greenwich, Connecticut is a very, very well-off community. But they have 5.3% of their housing as attainable housing. That's more than we have. And I mention Greenwich because it's a very affluent city in the Northeast. Just on Sunday, and I didn't pay Post and Courier to write this article, the front page story is not about the balloon that got shot down. It's about priced out. Soaring housing costs create tough hurdles for teachers. This particular teacher lives on James Island. He drives through James Island, drives through the West Ashland, through the city of Charleston, and then through the sprawling suburb of Mount Pleasant. He gets up at 4:30 in the morning to do that. It also talks about assistant principal. Not assistant principal, in fact, does a similar thing from North Charleston and takes her an hour and a half every day to get home. That's not a good environment for teachers teaching our children in the schools. They've already been up working for 4 hours before they even get to school. That's not something that we want to have for our teachers teaching our children. In this ordinance, we're going down to 8 units per acre with 4 attainable housing units. It was 16. It then went down to 12 last year, last March, less than a year ago. And now we're saying we need to go down to 4 units per acre in the commercial areas for attainable housing. If we want the private sector to develop our attainable housing, we have to make sure the numbers work for them to do it. Otherwise, we'll have to take money out of our budget and use it for attainable housing, like Greenwich, Connecticut, like Beaufort, like Charleston County's getting ready to do. And I've asked Scott Barhite from the Chamber and Josh Dix from Home Builders to give you an idea of what it takes for the people who are doing the building of the homes and what it takes for them to build attainable housing. And I'm not sure, Scott, whether you or Josh are going to go first, but come on up.
Josh is going to go.
I want to say thanks for giving us this opportunity. This is a big conversation to try and tackle, and but slowly we can get there kind of one at a time. I put together a presentation for you folks, and I printed off hard copies that we can leave afterwards. But the Charleston region, we have nearly 300 households across the Tri-County, with the median income being almost $66,000. That is a pretty significant figure, but then when you start to put that in context of the rest of the region, this is a stat that came out from the Charleston County housing plan that was just released last week. And it really starts to put together some price points with these figures that we talk about. You hear a lot about 80 AMI, 120 AMI, but what does that all really mean? Well, the median income of the region is $66,000. That's 80% AMI. That's where workforce housing begins. And the 120 rate is about 98,000. So you're talking about someone who can afford roughly a $2,500 a month rent or mortgage payment. They would qualify for roughly a $340,000 home. And so that really starts to limit your options when it comes to Mount Pleasant. We can see an elementary school teacher, they're being paid roughly $62,000. Firefighters are $40,000. We just don't have enough in those price points to help those folks. And if you look at 200 AMI, that's $570,000 a year, which is pretty close to the median home here in Mount Pleasant. And Mr. Chapman gave you these stats, and so I won't spend too much time on it, but we separate Mount Pleasant into two categories when we look at our statistics. We do lower Mount Pleasant and upper Mount Pleasant, and you can see lower Mount Pleasant is pretty significant here. You know, for the month of December, the median price was $765. For 2022, it was $885. You know, upper Mount Pleasant, it's a little different price point, but we're still in that upper stratosphere of 200 plus AMI to qualify for these homes. So single family just isn't really an option when we're talking about workforce housing in Mount Pleasant. The two largest demographics that we have regionally and nationwide are retirees and millennials. And these two groups, they want the same thing. They want dense, walkable communities. They don't want a yard. You've got the millennial who's trying to enter into the housing stratosphere. That's what they're wanting. Retirees, they want to downsize into something that's a little more manageable. And it's a product that we just don't have. And that doesn't exist in Mount Pleasant and doesn't really exist throughout the region. But it's what we call missing middle housing. Our zoning is set up for two types of housing, single family or the high density mid-rise development. We can address housing affordability through this missing middle housing. And the type of density that we're talking about, the 12 units an acre, would be categorized in this missing middle. You're talking about your more townhome style, courtyard style, luxury home. So when you look at it in that context, that townhome pricing, we're starting to get closer to that 120 AMI threshold of what they'd qualify for. You know, the December stats, lower Mount Pleasant is a $385,000 townhome. For upper Mount Pleasant, because of supply and demand, that price is significantly more in the upper part of the town. And so we were asked to look at how can we create an affordable scenario under these conditions. And you have to take several things into consideration when you're doing this. A lot of this type of development is going to require underground stormwater retention, which can be very expensive. We have to look at potentially a parking garage situation because you can't get the density to match the footprint. And as you can see here, this example that we were able to do, in order to get the math to work, you need to start with a 20-acre parcel. And there just aren't 20-acre parcels to get the kind of density that we're talking about in order to achieve affordable status. We ran a couple scenarios, and the 50-50 split that's being discussed, if you see that bottom line, RRR, that's internal rate of return. In order to get someone to underwrite a project like this, you need an IRR between 18 to 24%. At a 50-50 split, that is a negative almost 10%. You will never get that underwritten. The land cost in this, you're looking at almost $80,000 a unit. To really achieve affordable status in multifamily, you need closer to $25,000 a unit in order to achieve affordability. So the only way we could really get the math to work is looking at a 20-acre site. You take the 12 units that is already dedicated at market rate, and if you do two additional units at workforce housing, you can get that number as close to what an underwriter would approve, which is the 17.54%. Your land costs are still way above what we would need to in order to achieve affordability at $68,000. But we believe there's a market here, but this is going to require a density bonus, which isn't on the table. But I just wanted to show, in order to get the math to work, this is what would be needed. These types of communities are what or what is what the demand is. Unfortunately, we just don't have enough of this product. And it is something that, again, the two largest sectors of our region or our demographic is what they want. In order to achieve the real density that is being discussed to address the fire, police, the teachers, you need to really adopt something like what's happening in West Ashley, which is the Citadel Mall redevelopment. So as Town Center is being redeveloped, as you know, places like the Cinnabar are talking about being redeveloped, the old Kmart site, those infill opportunities, that's where you need the density. You're going to have to remove the multifamily moratorium in order to have a fighting chance to address affordability and get these teacher, fire, and police living closer to where they work. I just wanted to briefly go through this. I know you'll have a stacked agenda, so I wanted to leave it there. I do have copies, and I'm happy to leave this, but just wanted to run through the, you know, the math just doesn't support reducing the density and still being able to provide residential density. It's an unnecessary downzoning. We only have one of these mixed-use developments in the entire town. There's not, I pulled the listings over the weekend, there is not a listing in the MLS that would support this type of development. We just don't have any available land at the appropriate land cost in order to make the math work to do a 50-50 split or an 80-20 split. We just can't support it. And I think the math shows that a downzoning at this time is unnecessary. So I'm happy to answer any questions. I know the chamber also has comments, but again, thank you for the time, and I'm happy to keep talking during this discussion. So thanks.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the Planning Committee, thank you for, very much for this opportunity to speak briefly. My name is Scott Barhead. I'm the Senior Vice President for Government Relations at the Charleston Metro Chamber of Commerce. Josh did an outstanding job of addressing the, what I'll call the microeconomic issues. And I'd like to speak very briefly about what are the more macroeconomic issues that you're confronted with in the situation today. We've been tracking these housing issues for probably close to a decade now. Obviously, you're probably very, very well aware of the macro trends of the demographics in the Southeast. We are continuing to see the migration flows from the Midwest and the Northeast into the Southeastern states. What's unique about the Lowcountry is that that migration pattern has been at about a 2 to 2.2% rate every year for the last 10 years. Last year, you probably heard the number 33 people moving to the region a day. That's a little lower than normal trend. This year, the numbers are probably going to be even a little bit lower than that. But the reason I identify that that macro trend is that you're going to have continuing demand for the foreseeable future increasing. What you also have also realized is a lack of the ability of the local marketplaces throughout the region to match the supply requirements. Any of you that have studied just basic 101 economics knows that when you have rising demand and stifled supply, you have ever-increasing prices. That's been the situation in this region for the last decade. We do not believe that that trend is going to change without an increase in supply in the region. So instead of reducing potential supply, we believe the solution is to increase potential supply, or you will have an ever-increasing price for these median home prices in your town as well as throughout the region. We understand that there is a very particular issue that you're facing at the moment, whether or not to decrease the density in commercial zones relative to the residential density. We think that you're asking the wrong question. We think that you should be asking the question, what do we need to do to make sure that we can provide adequate affordable housing for the teachers in this community, for the workers that have to travel, as Mr. Chapman has indicated, sometimes an hour and a half one way to service your good citizens. What are you going to do to provide adequate housing in the future for your children, for your grandchildren, and for you, like myself, who are aging, eventually want to find someplace smaller that's also affordable? These trends are not working to your advantage. They're working to your disadvantage. We suggest to you strongly that the only way to get in front of the demand problem is to increase supply. It's fundamental macroeconomics. What we would invite you to do is to join with us in partnership with others in the community to identify an appropriate attainable housing plan for Mount Pleasant. We've been working for multiple years with Charleston County government. We're very pleased with the progress there. We believe that every town, every city, every county in the region should be doing similar kinds of analysis, and we would invite you to begin conversations about what would be the appropriate way to do that. We just don't believe that reducing density is going to be the way to work your way out of this macro problem. And Josh and I, maybe we could both step up to the podium. We're happy to answer any questions that you might have about either the macro issues that we see or the micro issues that Josh just discussed.
Are there any questions from the committee? All right. We don't have any questions at this time. You may be seated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for presenting. Thank you, Councilman Chapman, for inviting them to come present to us and for introducing that. Do we have any thoughts from the committee? Ms. Hyatt?
Looks to me. I do feel that we have an attainable housing issue. What we've proposed actually factors in a number for required attainable housing if you're going to do a development. Right now, we don't require that at all. I think there's a misunderstanding about what we're addressing. We're only addressing our linear commercial corridors because our comp plan calls for hubs. And moving away from linear density and to put into effect these denser hubs. There's no reason to have hubs if you're going to have density everywhere. So what we're trying to propose goes along with the suggestion of our comprehensive plan. We have, I believe, 8 hubs in the town. And those are going to be the areas where we can focus on putting density, walkability, all these things that everybody's suggesting. So we're just trying to move in that direction so that we do have some of the items that they're suggesting that we don't have. What was the other thing I was going to say? Now, as far as the fact that we had 16 units previously, that was only in our overlay. It's been 12 for a long time. And also, when they say we've only got one project like this, what we keep saying is Mount Pleasant's running out of land. So what do we think is going to happen? It's going to be these types of developments all over. So I think we want to encourage and codify what our plan is in our comp plan to do hubs. There's no reason to have hubs if you're going to have density everywhere. It just goes against what we're wanting to do. And that's my main thought, that we just want to reduce it in our linear corridors. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I know we've talked about this a lot and we're short on time, but I also, you know, I think we all know that's a problem, but this isn't going to fix it. Like, even if we did nothing and we did get density in commercial, it's still not going to fix it. We're still going to have teachers driving because they want to go to school here. We're still going to have people driving in to shop here. And just because people are moving here, does that mean that we have to provide them a place to live? I mean, I think as a council, we have to look at that. It's like, I feel like we're almost hurting our current residents to make room for those who want to live here and are making arrangements to move here. Maybe I'm nuts, but this doesn't make any sense. And I think that we're throwing the word out teacher and like they're all going to be able, if we do this, if we don't do this, they're all going to be able to live here. No, I think that's just a pipe dream. And anyway, that's it. Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, do you have anything?
I know I spoke too long already. I just wanted to say that we have this number of 12 units per acre already in Mount Pleasant. It works well at Ion, and there is no urgency to move this ordinance until January because there are no permits available. Second, the fact that the Planning Commission is looking at the rewrite of the code, and in there they're looking at potential for floating zones, which council, not by law, somebody has the right to do it, but council will determine where the appropriate places are and what the number might be. The number in these floating zones might be less than 8. It might be more. But council will have the opportunity to do that. And I'm anxious to see how that shakes out in terms of the commercial areas. The comp plan, which is aspirational, I understand that, now has 1 unit per acre, but 30% of those 1 units per acre is then attainable housing. It's not in any way viable, as you heard from the home builders. Thank you.
Ms. Hyatt? The 1 unit per acre piece with the comp plan is only in the town size redevelopment hubs. So we still have the neighborhood and the community size hubs that are going to allow for more density residentially, which is an Ion is the example of. And we also are going to have, we're going to still have multifamily zoning. We're still going to have PD opportunities. So people can bring a plan development to us that has higher density and residential that could be approved by council. This is just setting a baseline and having the ball in our court, so to speak. And if somebody wants to do more, you know, council can vote to approve a plan development that allows more. So we're not really eliminating opportunity. You know, we're adding the opportunity to include an attainable housing piece and just giving the town more control over what product we get and where it goes.
So I think, you know, a lot of times people say, well, we need to address the problem of sprawl. The problem is we've already sprawled. We have sprawl. The sprawl is here from the lowest end of town to the upper end of town. We have sprawl. And now we're being asked to add density to the sprawl. So we're not starting with a blank slate where we're building an ideal community with the appropriate hubs and the public transportation and the live work play. We are starting at a certain place. And the place that we are starting is as a bedroom community to the city of Charleston, right? And we are an amazing town in our own right, but the reason that people move to Mount Pleasant is because they want the great schools, they want the safe community, they want the parks and recreation that we offer, they want the beauty of Mount Pleasant. And I think that Ms. Corley is absolutely right that we need to think about our existing residents. And I think that the town of Mount Pleasant, the citizens, have actually made it clear where their priorities lie. In fact, when the 2020 county attainable housing tax was on the ballot, it was voted down primarily by the town of Mount Pleasant in the county. So if there is attainable housing to come, it's not going to come from our town dollars, like not based on the desires of our community, I don't think. So how do we incentivize the building of attainable housing? The current ordinance is 12 units market rate. It's not, there's zero attainable housing in the 12 units of market rate. There's no incentive to create attainable housing. By moving to, and then the commission, the planning commission actually suggested 2 and 8. They wanted 2 market rate and 8 affordable housing. So they're even proposing something more, more drastic than what this committee is proposing, which is a 50-50 split between between attainable and between market rate. So The other thing is Ms. Hyatt is absolutely right about this linear versus the hub development. We have moved away in our comp plan from this linear sort of infill density development into a hub concept because it's easier to service public transportation and those kinds of things if there are certain hubs throughout town where public transportation stops. So what this is addressing, as Ms. Hyatt said, is the linear commercial. We don't want to change the character of our town. And I also think that the numbers on attainable housing, there are so many grants and development opportunities. Like if there's a company that their focus is affordable housing, they know how to work the government grants and the systems in order to make it more of a possibility to do. And so I think you know what we have proposed is 4 and 8. I think is a good number, and I think that what Mr. Chapman said about the floating zoning is an interesting concept that I'm looking forward to seeing more of. But in the interim, between now and January, there is a reason to move forward. We want to have something in place so that we know what the lay of the land, so that we and the developers know what the lay of the land is and is going to be for our community. And I do think that our priority should be to our existing residents and not to people who are trying to move here. So I don't think there needs to be any motion coming out of item number 7. Let's move on to item number 8, the discussion and possible action regarding the expiration of the multifamily moratorium. Is there any comments from the committee on that? Or do we have a presentation?
Not really. I was going to brief you on the fact that this was first adopted in 2017. We had a two-year enacted for another 2 years, 2019. Here we are, 2021, or it was another 2 years, 2021. So this is actually the third iteration of this. It is set to expire in March, and it does have the two exemptions right now, which is for affordable housing and properties with a vested rights. We have the, as Mr. Chapman alluded to, we still have the building permit allocation system in place, which was adopted in 2019. It's a five-year program, and that will expire January of 24. And according to that, there are also no multifamily permits available. And I'm happy to answer questions, and I know Mr. Pagliarini is here.
Thank you. Do we have any comments from the committee? Ms. Hyatt?
Well, I guess I'd like to move to send the recommendation to full council to extend the moratorium so that we can have a vote there with full council.
Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. We are in discussion. Is there any discussion? I have some thoughts if there. Mr. Chapman? So if we go back one screen, we have had the moratorium in place since 2017, which I actually thought it was since 2019, so 2017. Mm-hmm. So we have had this moratorium in place. We're coming up on 6 years now.
Mm-hmm.
The moratorium is an extreme measure that is put into place to allow the town to do some sort of catch up, right? Like mm-hmm. we can catch up on our infrastructure, we can catch up on our schools, we can catch up on, it's there's a reason. And so it's adopted because we were trying to get our comp plan in place. Then we got our comp plan in place. Now we're doing our zoning code rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are currently under sort of a belt and suspenders type of approach with the multifamily moratorium and the building permit allocation. I think with the building permit allocation in place, which is a program that is very accepted and can be renewed at its termination for an additional 5 years to maintain that growth rate at the rate that we set for our community, I think that is a much stronger program than trying to extend a moratorium for an additional 2 years, 2, 4, 6 into 8 years. So I am comfortable letting the moratorium expire and relying on our permit allocation program to protect the growth rate of our community. Mr. Chapman?
Madam Chairman, I couldn't agree with you more. We have underway right now three major transportation projects. We've got Billy Swales coming up later this year underway. And that's the major transportation projects that we were trying to get done in order to catch up. We also have parks and playgrounds coming online with the passage of the referendum. So my point is, I agree with you. At this point, we're better off with the permit allocation than we are with the moratorium. And as a result, there aren't any permits available until we get to that in January anyway. So, and I made that statement already. So I agree with you.
Do you have any comments from Ms. Corley?
No. I'll just say we're relying on the vote of council to extend the permit allocation, which we don't know if that would even happen. And our reasoning before for extending it was to finish our zoning rewrite, which we haven't done. So that's why I would feel comfortable for at least another year, and we could always vote to, you know, do away with it once our zoning is completed. I'm not sure how much longer that's going to take, but in the past, that was the reason for having this in place, and we still haven't completed that process. It's underway, and I think it's come along really well, but to me, that's a reason to just keep this in place until that's finished.
All right, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor of the motion to send this to full council, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. So it's 2-2, motion fails. This does not prevent you, Ms. Hyatt, from placing this on the council agenda as an individual council member. It just wouldn't come with a recommendation from the committee.
Okay.
All right, moving on to item...
Ms. Whitley, was that you opposed as well?
Yes, me and Howard Chapman. Moving on to item number 9, update on public input matters meetings.
Yes, ma'am. Liz Boyles is going to provide a brief update on our public meetings. And I know we're under time crunch, so I'll make it quick. And
good morning. There we go. Good morning. Yes, I'll try to make it quick. But I wanted to let you know how the, can y'all, is that picking up? I can't tell. How the public input matters meetings have been going. We've had now 4 of our meetings. And we have 3 more to go. If you'll recall, we were doing these around town based on the districts that were defined in the comprehensive plan. So, like I said, our next one is this Thursday evening for the Coleman area. So that will be at Alhambra Hall on Thursday evening at 5. But these meetings were basically taking ideas from the comprehensive plan and sharing them, you know, with the public around town to try to see what the residents and business people within particular parts of town trying to kind of dial in on specific interests and concerns of the different parts of town versus the town as a whole. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So we've had increasing participation, which is nice. These were as of a couple weeks or a week or so ago, excuse me, we've had a few more, about a dozen more surveys filled out since this time. We do have the in-person meetings where staff is present to discuss whatever with the people that show up. But we also have the information that is that we're presenting is also available online. So if you can't come on that night, all the information is available online along with our survey. So just to give you a little bit of information on kind of what we're hearing, one of the topics we're talking about is livability, because that was something that was really important in the comp plan, is protecting the livability of the town. So we asked questions about, for instance, where do we excel? So we heard, and these have been fairly consistent across the different districts. So if that's where we excel, and there are areas where they're suggesting that we need to improve. Not a whole lot of surprises there. We talked about housing affordability. Similar conversation, asked questions about whether you know anybody yourself who could benefit, what categories would they fit into, similar to what you heard earlier, and what might be appropriate within your district for solving some of these issues. Business environment, we've looked at or have been asking questions about design, because, again, that was something that came out of the comp plan, was to look at how we could refine our regulations to better make a Mount Pleasant feel for future development designs in the town. So one of the things we talked about was the size and scale of buildings. And it was interesting, for the first several meetings, we heard kind of similar answers, interest in maybe 2-story buildings. But then at our last meeting, we had a preponderance of 1-story buildings was what the response was. And that was kind of interesting in that, back to this idea of different parts of town may require different sorts of solutions. So that's what we've been looking at there. Transportation, we've asked questions and had numerous conversations with residents over various projects that are in the works or might be. But the issues that concern them, they ranked here. And I know this is kind of a difficult graph, but we do have the raw data behind it. That we'll be working with CDM Smith to kind of to better study the data, that we will bring all of that to you when we're finished here at the end. We looked at trees and their, what people are thinking about that in recreation programs as well. Stormwater, we're looking at trying to better refine our education programs and that sort of thing to, for educating the public. Other stations were out there at the meetings as well, where our hazard mitigation and disaster preparedness folks, as well as the police and fire, they didn't have any questions in the survey, so I don't have that raw data. But that's kind of what we've been talking about. And as I said, we will have a full report for you once this is all over. But if you, you know, want to see any more information, we've certainly got it and be happy to share.
Thank you so much. Thanks for that update. Do we have any questions from the committee at this time?
Did you email us that?
I have not yet. No, ma'am.
Could you?
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Thank you, Ms. Corley. If there is nothing else to come before us, we are adjourned.